focus on corporate globalization in the Western Hemisphere. And so the way it works is that we have these really big enlargements that we have on fabric, which unfortunately there is nowhere to hang in the room. But you can see one hanging in the background there. And so we point to the different elements of the drawing and kind of interact with audiences about like what those different things mean. So it's a way of breaking down like really complex and overwhelming political issues into smaller, more digestible chunks that makes it easier for people to wrap their heads around. And certainly, it's certainly easier than trying to just talk kind of like just rhetoric, like just with words. It's like really easy to, not only for the speaker to get tripped up, but also for the audience to really follow like what is being spoken about. So this is one of our really early works about genetically modified corn. So in this case, we have a monarch butterfly with a gas mask on. It's kind of like a metaphor. So we speak in metaphors. And one thing you'll notice about our work, I think in some of our earlier work, we still used humans, but at a certain point, we decided to stop depicting humans. The problem with drawing humans is that you have to, you know, in order to try to make it and give it any sort of diversity, then you have to make a caricature of like what people of different cultures and races and genders look like. So instead, we chose to work with animals and insects that were native to the regions that we're talking about, which makes it so that people from those regions can like recognize things that they personally identify with. So in this case, like the modern butterfly is kind of like the Bambi of the insect world. And a lot of talk about how it was affected by genetically modified corn.
Being, and it's also the pollination is interestingly enough that the entirety of North America travels from Mexico to Canada, and a lot of the trade routes that we talk about and the economic policies affect the very same realm.
So this is some of our early work when we were still depicting humans.
Make sure it fits on there. There we go.
And so you see, it's like you have to kind of make a simplified version of a human being, but then it doesn't really function as well.
So this image was basically just about all the boxes that homogenization incorporates, sort of from genetic modification to just the commodification of even our neighborhoods and our crops and even the desires, like our shared backgrounds that we have from media culture. I just have to click again. One thing about our collective, too, that we should mention is that our collective is predominantly women, and we're not really playing that right now, but you should just know that even though there's two guys talking to you right now, the group is men, sort of.
This was the next in our series of graphics about the free trade area of the Americas. And so in all there's all these different animals that are caught in the web, and they're each wrapped up in a different type of long, skinny thing. So, for example, this is a crow that's wrapped up in jail bars and represents like the prison industrial complex, and just it being like the fastest growing private industry in the country. This bee in the middle is kind of like pouring a chemical mixture. So we're saying that it's a bee that's making NutraSweet instead of money now. And then there's some ants that are like pulling the plug. Underneath, in the underground, the ants in their tunnels are spelling global resistance to corporate colonialism. So
we'll
in this case,
we'll come back to this graphic too a little further on in the presentation, slightly greater detail. We'll see a little bit more of it. This is the graphic that was kind of expanding on the idea behind how we made the FTAA collaboratively creating this image that could collect all of these different ideas. And we took it a step further by speaking with the people who are directly affected. So this involved travels through Ecuador and Colombia in 2002 and direct question and answer sessions, brainstorming sessions about how we could represent the different struggles from teachers, unionists, community
So that's probably one of the most important elements of our work is that it's based mostly on word of mouth, on contact directly with people who are working on different issues. So we spoke to a really wide range of different organizations that work on different types of subject matter. And basically what we did was we took requests. So everything in the graphic is basically like a request that someone asked us to include. When we would ask them like, what is Plan Colombia to you? And we got like a really wide array of answers to that. I'm gonna go into a little more detail about this particular graphic. This is a work in progress that we're working on about Plan Puebla Panama and development in Mesoamerica, which we have more slides of at the end. But basically, this is like an old explorer's map. And in the corners, there's all these different explorers. And there's different winds that are represented on the old map that show different kinds of economic pressures. So on this side is like the manufacturing wind with different parts that are in an exploded view. On that side, there's a consumer cloud, which is shaped kind of like a vacuum cleaner that's got lots of disposable products along with it. At the top is the northern cloud, which is spraying a hail of bullets and chemicals. And the bottom, still in process, is the pressure to migrate north. So there's like a high pressure system from the south.
We'll zoom in on those clouds later too. This is a particularly hard slide to see everything. This is full fleshed out at the end of it.
Okay, so we'll just go over that. So the next few slides are just different examples of how we've set up kind of in a very public kind of display. So a big part of our strategy is using pictures to kind of draw people in and get people interested and curious about the graphic itself. And then once the graphic gets explained, it's like it's all about different social justice issues. And oftentimes the audience ends up being the one that really gives the presentation because they'll be pointing out things in the graphic.
This is actually at a teacher's training school in La Esperanza, Honduras, where the kids stole the show. Like, we were very weary from the road, and they knew the whole presentation despite not living in Colombia. The stories still resonate. Previous slide was in Ecuador, where a pipeline connecting to the Colombian network was going to be built. So these images, those were during the research gathering.
So then just the point that all of these images are produced by hand, pen and ink on paper. And one thing I want to invite any of you, all of you, please to feel free to interrupt us at any point. And just don't feel like you have to save your questions for the end.
So we're sort of trying to unify these different things, the illustration with the storytelling. And there's another aspect of what we do that we're not covering today, but that's mosaics, but showing the interconnectedness of things through these different mediums. This is our commander-in-chief.
So we wanted to share with you like a complete rundown in brief. Usually it takes 2 hours, but we have more limited time today. Of our narrative about Plan Colombia, just to show an example of how it is that we usually do our presentation. So let's see. This is there's a banner that's laid out on the ground right there, which is the big picture, and the projections are like enlargements of the big picture. You'll see that this is like a double-tiered wasp nest. So the top is shaped like Europe, and with the way paper wasp nests grow in nature is when one gets too full, another one will drop out of the bottom. So this was the metaphor of colonization. So there's all these different kind of colonist wasps that are flying out of that hive and coming into this one. Can anyone guess why we chose wasps?
Oh, I don't know.
Go ahead, Bill.
I noticed you got one with the paper hat?
Yes.
Yeah, and it, so that's to illustrate how religion took played a major role in the colonization.
Yeah, absolutely. There's the papal hat one.
We'll go through the colonists. There's quite a few different like hats that they wear, and they sort of talk about the story of what was brought to create the new world.
One of the filters that we run all of our images through is instead of giving them a full costume, we'll give them a hat because a hat places them in a period and gives them an occupation.
So basically, from the top down, the story is in a way linear. It can also go back up from the bottom, but so the wasp nest is the beginning point, and then wasp being just sort of like a, well, does anyone want to guess why wasps are used?
It's just a silly joke about white Anglo-Saxon Protestants.
We never miss the opportunity to use like puns. Oh. A lot of the stuff we're working with is pretty grim, so, to say the least.
Did you have another comment?
I thought you were going to use wasps because they spread a lot. I don't know, but that would make much more sense.
They're definitely a fitting metaphor in lots of different ways. The way they'll like they'll occupy one colony and then move over to another colony. But and actually in our current work, we've also decided never to demonize any animals from the natural world. So we keep on adding filters as we go. Like as our work progresses, we filter it more and more. So this is a close-up of the European wasp nest and the colonists. There's individual slides of each colonist, right?
Yeah, but you skipped over the slides about the layers.
The closer, if you go back maybe. Oh, the other way. Roll the mouse button. Yeah. So one of the sort of cardinal elements of the poster is that it's you're supposed to be conceiving of it as being this like sandwich of different layers. And when you see the leafcutter ants, they're the protagonists in the story, you'll see them marching along the margins. When they're cutting away, just like they do in nature, the canopy, they're cutting away the topmost layer of the graphic, and they're revealing in the next slide what lies beneath it, what's underneath this canopy. And in a way, the canopy is like a nightmare. The topmost layer is the myth and the illusion and the violence that's happening in the region. And beneath, we have all the biodiversity of Colombia. So you'll see throughout the graphic and the presentation these parts where it's been deconstructed.
And wherever the ants cut, they tend to make a comparison between diversity and monoculture, or life and death.
Is that the Italian boot?
Yep. It is. Yes.
And what do the Italians say about it?
Well, it's not. It's really just to help identify that as Europe. You see, it's not like targeting Italy specifically, but just it's something that definitely it helps for people to recognize it as Europe.
Do you recognize these at all?
Yeah, the Spanish.
It's kind of.
Oh,
so when we were asking folks like, well, what is Plum Colombia? We received the answer a lot. Well, it's colonization, and to understand that, we had to go back and ask them questions about why they thought Plum Colombia was an extension of that. So you'll see here's sort of the cast of characters coming over. Who's this?
Puritan.
Exactly, yeah. Backpack looking for some waterfront property.
So here, we're making there's the connection being made between religion. This is a missionary character. And the missionary is bringing the cross of religion as well as the cross of Western medicine, which are two like paradigm shifts that were being like imported in from the Western world.
This is like two weapons. Obviously the cutlass, so that the conquistador character is bringing over this weaponry. But can you guess as to what the other weapon is?
Disease.
Mm-hmm. So smallpox.
Yeah.
Like bioterrorism, basically, in its earliest forms in this continent. And many people said that Plan Colombia is an extension of, it has elements of bioterrorism, biowarfare. Got a general here, and then the table praying mantis. The general's talking about property ownership and the idea that now you can own a parcel of land, and so you have to have weapons and militias to defend it. It's the double cross on the hand. Jesus.
So the judge is bringing the Western notions of time and capital punishment. So just to clarify, this whole graphic is about a U.S. foreign policy called Plan Colombia, which is commonly known as the War on Drugs. And what we're trying to do is really broaden the discussion and have it be more than just about cocaine and the war on drugs, and just talk about like all the different aspects of the war on drugs, the way that it goes on. Can you click to the next slide? It says across the top, instead of Plan Colombia, it says Plan Colonia in a barcode font, 500 years of terrorism. And so this was something that was done like shortly after 9/11, and we also wanted to change the terms of debate about what defines terrorism as well.
One thing we didn't mention yet is that we don't, and it might be obvious by now, but we don't draw humans. And there's a number of reasons for that. There's a number of reasons why we're taking on issues like talking about terrorism. It's to change the debate, like we said a moment ago, and to change the way people perceive things. And images inherently just let you remove yourself from the normal scope of thinking. And so when you don't have a reference point of a human, you need to step back and ask, well, who are these characters? Who am I? Who are they in the picture? And it also removes stereotypes from sinking in the way a Disney cartoons might, or the villain typically has an Arabic accent, something like that. So I just wanted to throw that in before we go further. So speaking of further.
This is the metaphor of consumerism, which when we asked people why they thought that this foreign policy was taking place, people would often cite just the rampant consumerism of the North. So in this case, it's the larva isolated in their cells, and in the stage of the growth of an insect, that a larva's job is just to consume. So it's an apt metaphor for that.
Do people recognize the silhouette?
Yeah, but sometimes it takes a moment for them to recognize the silhouette because it's kind of a little bit distorted, and we find that it's kind of like this. What we refer to it as an oh shit moment of like, oh, okay. To kind of like start. It's like a picture that doesn't. You don't get it all at once right away. It takes a moment to hit you.
You said this was drawn like right after 9/11, like around the time was it more. Like more of a resistance to your message.
We were really concerned that there would be a problem with like showing these graphics, and after we came back, that the same spring of shortly after 9/11, we went and did a tour like all around the country and spoke to many many different audiences, and we really got an overwhelmingly positive response.
We were allowed to speak in the auditorium of public high schools. We couldn't believe it. It's just a real testimony to how much when you're not having a debate with words, you can talk about these things in a way that's more ethereal and people don't. It's just not as confrontational. So we were able to talk about the war on drugs and terrorism and be pretty straightforward with our politics because we were using cartoons and because especially high school teachers are so desperate to have material that the kids get the kids interested in talking about these big, overwhelming, complex issues. So a lot of economics and Spanish teachers and
history teachers,
yeah, current events teachers were bringing us to their school.
At some point, would you speak, it seems to me that there are roots here in Mexican muralism, whether you would speak about your artistic roots.
The use of images like on a banner that are used to talk about an issue or to tell a story is like a really ancient it's like a really ancient practice. I mean, dating to walls on a cave.
But I guess the complexity of detail,
It's kind of what I think the complexity of detail originated from. When we first set out to do these interviews and to ask people what they thought about these different issues, I think it was the diversity of responses that we got that none of them we could really like leave out. is what led to the complexity of the graphic. So it gave us this really huge flow chart of concepts that had to be included in a limited space. So.
Yeah, and we really have a passion in all the different ways that, all the different mediums that we have going on in our collective to be able to show the big picture and the little picture at the same time. And for a lot of us, a lot of the people in our collective are young people that grew up on junk food, television, video games, and it's really small attention span. So this is our therapy as well, to be able to wrap our heads around all the little symptoms as well as the bigger picture of what's going on and try to talk about those things as an alternative to the way that politics is also often presented as a single issue things or using really bite-sized advertising style imagery or to talk about this stuff. So
when we jump in, we see the occupant as the next form of the larva, or the next form of the wasp, rather, the larva, and its job is consuming and consuming. So this is pretty controversial, but that's the point that we're trying to drive home here, is that there's a reason for the resource extraction that is happening in the places that Central America, India, wherever, and the cause for that is the hunger. Here we have a larva that's avidly watching Fox News. And there's certain details about how the larvae are living. Like they have a lot of technology. For instance, these two are probably talking to each other. But they are also very, very isolated in state cells. There's a lot of isolation and alienation that's just built in and hard-coded to our culture. Some of the larvae have become specialized. They're so large. This is who?
Window.
So some of them are placed in specific places, like the Windows one we put in the status in the Washington State to be like in Seattle, where Microsoft is based.
I saw the Texas one had a cowboy hat.
That's right. Yeah. This is the McDonald's larva that's got an Alca meal. Alca is Spanish for Free Trade Area of the Americas.
And again, Alca here on the shopping bags is a reference to the sweatshops that were the booming Mexican industry after NAFTA went through.
One of the filters that we run our images through is trying to use as few words as possible so that somebody who speaks a different language would still be able to interact with the work. This is the cocaine larva. And so it's got the kind of the street reference of the eight ball eyes. And so we use these as talking points, like usually we say that talk about the impacts of mandatory minimal sentencing and how like crack cocaine will get you a bigger sentence than powder.
That has to do with the normal who they find using crack cocaine. Like you usually find crack cocaine users in low income areas, whereas you find powder cocaine users in corporate America, I guess.
Right, the higher elites in society.
What's interesting too is that actually it's a myth that it's young African American men that are caught the most with crack cocaine. It's actually young Caucasian men, which isn't really publicized. But that also is, there's an irony about how even the government perceives the problem, despite the fact that more and more money is going into Colombia to stop the income of cocaine. The numbers of cocaine it continues to rise. The RAND Corporation, a conservative think tank, they estimated it would be 15 times more cost effective to just do treatment programs in communities and cities rather than currently following through with Plan Colombia as it is.
But that's because Plan Colombia isn't really about stopping them.
Perhaps, yeah.
Maybe. This is the oil baron larva in Texas. One thing we were surprised to learn was that the war on drugs and the war in Colombia really has a lot to do with oil. This is Larval Schwarzenegger, who is connecting Hollywood and the military, just the whole entertainment industry, kind of creating war as something that we can enjoy in our theater seats.
A lot of big blockbusters nowadays are full collaborations with the Pentagon. So your taxpayer money going into paying for weapons to be portrayed in an action-packed film.
Like what?
Blackhawk Down.
Blackhawk Down is the first feature length. A lot of recruiting videos now, even though those aren't full length movies. You know, so in exchange for some of the control of the plot, U.S. military weapons are used in this film. So.
A lot of the feel-good army commercials that are shown on television now are produced by Disney.
What we have now, speaking of weaponry, actually, is moving down the sort of central part of the poster is the growth of the larva into their adult stage and their adult forms, and we'll see how Plan Columbia is implemented. And this is described to us as this multi-layered swarm, basically, of equipment.
So this is what it takes in order to get the hungry consumers the resources that they need. Go ahead, David.
It's also important to keep in mind that it's just amazing that all of these gizmos are to carry out a war on a planet. So that's the idea, is to wipe out the cocoa plant. And it takes all this gear to do that.
This is the newer version of the missionary wasp at the beginning. This is the praying mantis missionary, still with the same two crosses, talking about how oftentimes the funding that comes, or I'm sorry, missionary funding and efforts to build water treatment systems or those things in communities, that's often co-opted by giant agribusiness corporations that want to know what the people that they're helping know in terms of their plant knowledge, their traditional inherited knowledge about the different parts of the area. So what's called first contact is effectively the foot in the door for these corporations to be able to mine the DNA of these plants. So you'll see this tie-in again later.
Let's just breeze through this.
Okay. This is an AWAC plane, mobile communication standard for the global north. So these are at play there. Those are the ears of the north. These are the eyes, low-flying satellite systems that are designed to pinpoint where the coke is growing. Very expensive. Many people describe this to us as the eye in the sky. OV-10 Bronco was originally used in Vietnam. Now they're used in Plant Columbia, except they're not spraying Agent Orange anymore. What they're doing now is the scout run preceding the fumigations, which I'll describe in a moment. So, Blackhawk helicopters costing $9.6 million each. You pay for these if you pay taxes. These are, I guess 19 of these was given to the Colombian military, which has one of the worst human rights track records in history. It's interesting to know the names of the different military equipment that we use, incidentally. Blackhawk helicopters, Apache helicopters, Tomahawk cruise missiles, the names of indigenous people used against their indigenous people. And here are the fumigations themselves, with two planes flying emblazoned with the logos of the corporations that are making the most money off the drug war. And on the left, we've got Monsanto, and on the right, we've got DynCorp. And what you see here is the high-altitude fumigation, which is sort of an oxymoron. We'll zoom in a little bit and then talk about the fumigations in general.
So Monsanto is a biotech company that produces glyphosate, which is what they're dropping in Colombia. And so it's very similar to Agent Orange, which Monsanto also produced in the Vietnam era. And Monsanto's motto, ironically, is food, health, and hope.
Food,
health, and hope. They're having to fly extremely high because of armed actors that are on the ground trying to shoot the planes down, and also because of the terrain of the Andes Mountains. Which is causing a really huge problem of drift, that the fumigations are extremely inaccurate. And even in neighboring Ecuador, like, they've had to shut down schools because of the problem of drift. And it's also causing the problem that it's ending up in the water, and it's ending up on people's subsistence crops. And so it's fueling this the internal refugee situation in Colombia, which is extremely major.
Yeah, the highest except for Darfur. Right now there's 3 million internally. We'll come back to that.
DynCorp is similar to Blackwater. They're a private military corporation. They have a lot of they have a lot of actors in Colombia. In fact, if we had as many actual just regular U.S. military as there are DynCorp employees in Colombia, we would have to declare open war because of the amount of troops that are present there.
Since 1963, DynCorp and the U.S. have been together in every single major U.S. initiative.
So they represent the privatization of
they're like the multi-tool. They're doing, they're the power behind it, flying the planes, protecting the pipelines. And then so here is the fumigations from high up. And then we see the forest in the background. It vaguely resembles a rib cage to remind us that what's at stake here is the lungs of the earth, and this is where these chemicals are falling. This is the Amazon. This is where oxygen is produced in mass.
So the trees and the animals in the forest are depicted in kind of a ghostly way to show that they're being threatened.
And so there's this big question of, well, okay, so all this is basically the attack against this plant. Yet more and more cocaine is coming into the country, and there's the question you had or the statement you made of, like, yeah, is this really about the drug war? The people that we spoke with said, no, this is obviously a smokescreen. It's plain as day. And so on the landscape beneath the fumigations are these different large mosquitoes. They're mechanized mosquitoes that have landed. And we'll go through and show what the land is now being used for and how Planet Columbia is actually a land grab.
So the mechanical mosquitoes are our metaphor for resource extraction. These are the oil mosquitoes. And originally the mosquitoes came from a metaphor that the Uwa indigenous group uses to talk about oil as being the blood of the earth. So that's where that mosquito metaphor originated. This is the Nest mosquito. It's like the Swiss corporation Nestle. They've got huge land holdings there for dairy, cacao plantations, and they've been shown to work with paramilitary organizations to guard their holdings in Colombia. This is a more of a historical reference. The Ford oil mosquito was the Ford rubber mosquito. I'm sorry. Rubber was the first big like industrial revolution in the Andes. Now it was mostly for tires for the growing car industry, which is now of course mostly petroleum that tires are made of.
This is biopiracy, linking back to the missionary, copywriting genetic materials, build databases, making slight modifications to plants and then owning that new plant. Big business. Coca-Cola's in here for a number of reasons. They're the world's largest water privatizer, but they're also implicated in the deaths of unionists in their bottling facilities in Colombia. For every five unionists in the world that are murdered or disappeared, three of those happenings occurred in Colombia. A particular union has been targeted with actual documentation of workers being gunned down within factory walls. So there's a large campaign called Killer Coke and others to push Coke off of campuses and stop making them funders for educational materials. Here's, again, the oil mosquitoes. We just touched on this. And then the pipeline going through the middle is the large network of pipes that's created throughout Colombia.
So alongside the pipeline are these military...
Here's some of the corporations involved. We've got BP, Occidental, which Alcor has a lot of stock in, Repsol. And here's what he was just talking about.
So alongside the pipeline, there's these militarized beetles. And so there's a close-up of two of these beetles that are a specific reference to paramilitaries. And people requested that we have one using a chainsaw because of the level of brutality that's taking place in Colombia. So this one is rolling up a ball of ant bodies, and it's so together they represent one of the many massacres that's taken place to basically scare people off of their land and to... just to basically using terror tactics to displace communities. And this is a refugee family that's running away from the violence. And it's also important to point out that I think it's like 80% of the internal refugees in Colombia are Afro-Colombian descent.
This is where the whole layers comes into play. This one ant is beckoning this family, the displaced, into the ant world, which is preceded by their fancy PowerPoint cut. This is where the cut that the ants have made is the largest. And so across the center, starting at the bottom left and going to the top right, we see this slice they've made. And the bottom right, they've removed the nightmare, and the top left is where it remains. So we're going to go through the spiral of the ant world and see the comparison between the colonized world.
And having these comparisons in the bottom in the ant world was our way of being able to really get down into the little details that people were telling us about the cultural implications of colonization and all these really interesting opposites that people were explaining to us.
So this is a fiesta scene, and we didn't we kept on asking people like what is like some of the hope and some of the good news in the situation, which we were kind of surprised to hear the fiesta over and over again. And so a fiesta is like a time when a community like comes together, shares resources, and create and maintains their culture even in the face of such oppression. And on the colonized side is a karaoke bar,
the direct request.
So here the ants are singing music that's got barcodes and copyright symbols because it's music for money instead of culture. And instead of passing around one bottle of rum, they've each got their own little bottle of beer because they don't like to share as much. The moon's been replaced by a disco ball. Go ahead.
symbolizes the word in so many different ways and preservation of language and culture. And so in the new poster, we have that symbol a lot, going between elders and young people and in different situations. So we're figuring out how to stick that in there in whatever ways we can help you understand.
I know this is, the format is based on, you know, these large posters, but I was just curious if you've also produced other formats, like maybe books that show the details blown up or anything like that.
Yeah, we have these narratives that actually walk you through everything we're showing and more. They're on the table out there too. Unfortunately, we didn't have time to make some English ones, but there's Spanish ones, and you can download them off our website. And we also, I don't think we touched on this, but all of the images that we use or that we create are anti-copyright, so we actually encourage groups to replicate them with or without the text that explains them. Some of them are self-explanatory, to be able to use in their campaign. So it's a big part of why it's black and white, for instance, so it's easily reproducible.
And one of the our plans when we finish this trilogy that we've been working on is to make a coloring book, sort of a big fun activity book about globalization and biodiversity that will have a lot more accompanying text.
Where are you guys based? Are you here in Austin?
In Maine. Almos in Austin. We're kind of spread out all over the place, but we have a base in Maine.
Should we go through all of these? Maybe just select a few. This is dollarization of economies. This is agriculture versus agribusiness. And so we see differences. We'd like to leave more of a request to check this out on the poster itself. These are two different classrooms, so this is particularly applicable. Here, these miners are learning about solidarity. They're learning how to link arms to form a blockade and realize they can control their workplace. And so they're reading literature, and on the table is a bowl of coca leaves. This was a big thing that people said, you have to tell people in the north that the plant so sacred that we call it mama coca is not the same thing as cocaine. So in Colombia and Bolivia, coca is chewed almost like we have a cup of coffee. So they're warding off fatigue. On the far left is a little ant fist. That's mandatory in all leftist propaganda. And then a very different school, the School of the Americas, located in Fort Benning, Georgia, which is actually in the city of Columbus, Georgia. And you'll note Columbus's Maltese cross on their logo. They even have a statue of him on base. This is where representatives from the militaries in Central and South America, they send representatives to receive training from the United States Army. And the training is often not only in the use of weapons, but also in the use of what's called counterinsurgency techniques. This is where the Contras were trained during the Nicaragua situation. And so they're learning, instead of how to link arms, how to dismember. The school was shut down because of widespread protest, and then reopened, now calling itself the Western Hemisphere Institute of Security Cooperation. And the Columbus's cross on there is from their website, to pay homage to Columbus's 500-year legacy in security cooperation in the Western Hemisphere. So on the table there, instead of coca leaves, is cocaine, which is not even a joke.
So these two opposites here, so this is around the campfire and about historical memory and elders, media. In the next scene, we have the new campfire. They're all around the television instead, and we're talking about how the story is either given directly between people or piped in from away.
Look more sickly.
Kinds of stories. What?
These ends look more sickly than the ones you left.
Well, yeah.
It's not called programming for nothing. Again, more about agriculture, specifically about corn here and genetically modified versus the native varieties.
This is a scene depicting the difference between coca and cocaine. So in the middle, there's a bush, a coca bush, that on one side, all the leaves have turned into dollar bills. And on one side, it shows them making medicine out of the coca for an ant that's feeling dizzy. And on the other side, the ants are processing it and adding many chemicals. Like, it's important to note that there's lots of chemicals added to make cocaine. And then they're, like, bagging it up and shipping it off to the major consumers of cocaine in the world.
And in the center is this word around this heart that says Pachacutic. This is a Quechua word that roughly translates to the earth time. You'll notice that the heart is broken into the heart at the center. On one side, it's this linear model of how much can we take from the planet, how much oil can we get from this region. And then on the opposite side, we have this spiral representing, it's sort of hard to even describe in our language, but the notion of circular time almost growing as if the trees on the rings on a tree. And so a way that this was explained to us was what comes around goes around. As with 9/11, how we were talking about terrorism in the beginning of the graphic, many people said, Pachacutic in reference to the U.S. changing rhetoric after 9/11. So.
Pachacutic is also the name of a major indigenous rights movement in Ecuador that's been active and resisting resource extraction.
Yeah.
So did they relate United States to, like, when they say what comes around goes around, maybe to like empires of, I guess, like Maya or the Inca, how they, like, empires always, like, grow and evolve?
Yeah, totally. There's so many different ways. Like, it's, like, so all-encompassing that, like, you can almost look anywhere and see the evidence of the past and the present, and vice versa, in the future, so we can, you know, extrapolate what might happen. And just how odd it was that the U.S. was calling every other country terrorists, you know. Even the talk of the war on drugs changed to the war on terror, because now these guerrillas were suddenly terrorists. And before that, it was the war against communism. So that those changes being historical.
One of the ways that Pachacutic is a big symbol of hope is that as the spiral of time is growing, like the spiral of time it starts in the middle of the spiral. And as the spiral grows, a new layer is always covering up the old layer of the spiral. So that's like up to us to like to make that a more positive layer than the one that it's replacing.
The little leaf cutter ants, they've been walking on the margins this whole time, and they're carrying the pieces of the nightmare that they've cut away. And what they're doing is they're putting it through a filter. They know that they can't just reassemble it and create the world they want. They have to actually run it through this filter. They're using the soil to compost this nightmare. And to create it into something fertile. So you see the sprouts at the top there, packaging up contaminated soil. Here what they're doing is they're hacking away at this pipeline, the oil pipeline. The plant you see is cat's claw. It's actually strong enough to rip through concrete. When we zoom out and we see the pipeline, it actually spells out Colombia and as part of Plan Colombia. And so not only are they're dismantling the pipeline as it pertains to oil, but also just this, what people describe to us as mass hallucination that Colombia defines the people that exist within its borders, just like any borders. So that was sort of their way of talking about dismantling the illusion and dismantling this really pervasive kind of idea.
So part of a big part of the reason why we chose ants as the protagonist of the story is because ants are really good at their collective work, and they have like immense power in numbers, but they're also very strong as individuals. So it's also a way of seeing the revolution as not some kind of cataclysmic bloodbath that everything will be better afterwards, but actually like the everyday things, like the little things that we do constantly to try and improve the world around us and to affect social change. So there's a saying in Latin America that the revolution is the work of the ants. So that's why we chose them.
So they're the heroes of the story. That's the end of that story. What we have here? Oh, did you want
to? I was just going to introduce this as. This is the graphic that was produced prior to the Plan Colombia graphic, which is focused on the free trade area of the Americas.
We're just going to give you a real brief like walk through some of these. I think we have some narratives outside if you'd like to look at this graphic more in depth. And then what's more interesting is the stuff that we're about to come out with, which we have a couple slides that are kind of animated that show you the process in which we created like a very condensed piece of imagery. So at the FTAA, there's these different animals being caught in this web that's woven by these spiders that represent
starting with the top left, development, militarization, and corporate media. Here, militarization again, guns aimed at Central America. And the corporate media spider with Nike hooks and blinded by the NASDAQ and stock market symbols. So the webs are pertinent to what the animals represent. Like this is representing Maquiladoras, and so this monkey is bound up in the thread of the sewing machine. The crow representing the prison industrial complex, fastest growing industry in the US today. Borders are something we talk about a lot, how borders are not something that seems to affect money. In fact, they encourage money to cross borders, but humans aren't capable of doing it often. There was protesters to try and demonstrate against the FTAA in Quebec that were trying to go into Canada from the US, and so to get across the border, they dressed up as money. It didn't work, but it was symbolic. This is a quote from the World Bank, the next world war will be about water. And how these spiders have us thinking that everything's about oil development, militarization. It's in really big media, but water is being privatized. And that's something we can't live without.
Can I say one thing? I didn't want to even say this, but when you're saying that, I heard it twice, that the prisons are the fastest growing private industry, mm-hmm. and actually 95% of them are still owned by the state. So I think there's a relationship to capital, certainly in a whole industry that's grown up around it in order to kind of service the prisons. But, you know, how would that change our representation? Like Ruth Wilson Gilmore has just written this brilliant book about, called Golden Gulag, right? That's looking at the massive expansions, you know, the most massive prison building project in human history, right?
Right.
I mean, we have, 5% of the world's population in the U.S. and 28% of the world's prison population, right? So it's intense. But how would that change the way that we think about it, right? I don't know,
I think the just to give you a really brief answer, since we don't have much time, I think the main point of one of the main problems with privatization is accountability, and that it's not like the power of the state that people would be able to try to influence through the representatives, but it's private corporations, which people have a lot less say over, like what takes place behind those walls when you're dealing with private.
Is it that you said that they're federally owned or managed? Is that existing? Because I think that the growth rate maybe is what is highly being privatized right now. And that it's sort of churning over hands, but you may be more informed.
I think
we still have about half an hour.
No way. I thought we had until 10:30.
10:45. I wasn't trying. I didn't mean to derail you.
15 minutes?
Just something I was thinking about.
Oh, okay. Great. Yeah. No, it's great. Thank you. Yeah, I guess we have about 15 minutes. Then.
But I think accountability is kind of like the fundamental problem with privatization. Is that what you're asking?
No. I mean, I agree that privatization, commodification is a big problem. And this is brilliant, right? Like, the medium and everything. There's just this one thing about, like, how do we represent a prison industrial complex? It's not necessarily always about privatization. It's about the state, you know, putting away bodies that aren't about, it's not about production. You know, a lot of folks aren't working. It's about stacking surplus bodies up, right? So it's just,
yeah,
I mean, that was the...
We get... It's so hard to sum stuff up in one little cartoon. And the FTA poster, all the different animals that are stuck in the web, we're trying to focus in on teaching people about this changeover that's happening with privatization. So that's all the different ones that are there. That sort of it fits into how we're portraying free trade as a privatization.
And just visualizing like what the content of the government is now as being like, you know, almost like a smokescreen in of itself with lobbyists and, yeah, you know what I'm saying. But.
So the ants, again, the protagonist of this graphic, and in their underground tunnels are spelling global resistance to corporate colonialism.
So that one you just saw was the first this trilogy that we've been working on, and it's a bit more overarching and sort of thinking in that way. I mean, certainly it's way more detailed than a lot of the propaganda posters that you see, but it still was like a very big picture lens of what's going on with globalization. And then the Columbia poster was next, and that was us trying to jump into one place in the world and find the whole story of colonization and globalization in this one specific, geographically specific story. And then the third poster is what we've been working on for 3 years now. And it's about development and globalization in Mesoamerica. And so to start work on this poster, 10 of us traveled from Puebla, Mexico, all the way to Panama over 5 months, collecting stories from different communities and organizations, and then also using our posters that we had already produced, giving talks at schools all along the way to collect a lot of information from the kids and figure out how to tell the story in a way that could be very all ages and really accessible. And so since then, we've been trying to synthesize these all into metaphors that would translate for everyone involved.
How do you support yourself?
It's pretty amazing how it's working. There's just such an intense need for this kind of medium to talk about big, scary things in ways that are more palatable, that we have been able to support all of this off of donations for the posters and for us speaking. And we give away, and we don't get grants because we don't fit in any of the boxes, because we fit in too many boxes, so nobody wants to deal with this. And we give away half of the posters for free at high schools or in Latin America, and the other half is subsidized by donations from mostly the white left in the U.S., like at demonstrations and things. We are collecting donations that then subsidize the posters for everybody else. And then when we give talks, half of them are for free, community-oriented things, and the other half are usually student groups at colleges around the country pulling together little bits of money from all their different student budgets to bring us, and that's what's keeping it all afloat. We actually we own two buildings in Machias, Maine, where we are based, and have been doing community organizing there. So we have it's quite a bit of infrastructure for really just having made a few posters. And I just think that's such a crazy story about how badly people need this stuff and how we can take off just that intensity.
So we talked a little about the next graphic as the front of it is this historical map, and then in the corners are the different sort of figureheads of globalization. We'll zoom in on it, but we've got the IDB, the International Development Bank, the International Inter-American Development Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the World Trade Organization, and this will be the World Bank.
This is a close-up of the Inter-American Development Bank. And we've represented like the populace as these paper cutout people that are being shown what the FTAA is in this presentation, and then on the opposite side of this hand they're being shaken down to show that it's tax money that's being used to make this development happen. It's the character itself is like a combination of a cash register and a conquistador's armor. To kind of keep the modern colonization like in that historical context.
Did it say it says NAFTA?
It says NAFTA, and then it's rolling down, and then there's like a C replacing it, so it's CAFTA. Okay. So it was the North American Free Trade Agreement, and then the Central American Free Trade Agreement. So it's kind of like free trade kind of creeping down south incrementally,
with the eventual goal being this free trade area of the Americas for the whole hemisphere, which talks have so far not been successful as those organizers would gauge. This is sort of the kind of smaller version of the IDB that is specific to Latin America that is portrayed as a dog in reference to the use of dogs against the indigenous people that happened 500 years ago. But also it's an ATM in the region. It takes on the projects that the IDB doesn't want to be tarnished by taking on.
And just the one little detail is that the governments are depicted as puppet governments, like finger puppets.
We have to go to all these weird lengths to not cross humans. Like, it's this weird, strange conversations we have about how to not peg it into just drawing cartoons of certain characters that you could blame to people and making it more generic and zooming it out to be like, more symbols of humans.
This is the World Trade Organization portrayed as a judge that's deciding the rules of free trade. And so it's playing this pop-a-mole game with its riot cop puppet that's got its gavel, and it's playing that carnival game where you try to beat down the different moles that pop up. And so the different moles represent different kind of different movements, like the environmental movement, the Zapatista movement. This one depicts Vandana Shiva. That's Jose Bové, the French farmer who drove his tractor through McDonald's. So. These different like movements that keep on popping up. All the organizations are portrayed as these faceless entities, but in here we're trying to figure out how to show that there's elites that are pulling the strings of these different organizations. This is the International Monetary Fund depicted as a doctor who is evaluating the health of different global economies and trying to prescribe the same exact thing to everybody. The doctor has a knot tied in its stethoscope because it's not listening to the people. And it's got a patient, is a map of Mesoamerica. And it's got two dams being used as defibrillators to put energy into the region. This is a triple syringe that's extracting oil, water, and genetic material.
Here's the metaphor for debt as like leeches. It's very difficult to like come up with like a visualization for how debt works.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Without humans and without words.
And then there's an IV bag that's the concrete mixer that's kind of pumping development into the region.
Here's sort of the landmass. Zooming in on parts of Mesoamerica, we have the giant electrical infrastructure marching in. What's particularly insidious about the plan is that if you oppose this development project, that sort of means, oh, you oppose like these people in the region having electricity, or you don't want them to have roads. But many people say, well, what good is a road when I don't have a car? You know, what good is this electricity when it's never being scaled down for residential use? It's purely taking hydroelectric power to the north, or it's for the large factories that are going in. And like right next to it, the old galleons, the Spanish boats.
A big part of what we'll be talking about in this next poster is about development as it relates to scale. So like the scale of like big business development versus community development.
These are some of the wins. This is the manufactured goods coming from.
This is the consumer
cloud. I'm sorry, consumer cloud.
So it's shaped like a vacuum cleaner, and it's got many disposable products, and it's the only cloud that's actually sucking in instead of like blowing out.
It's a Hummer on top there.
See.
Here's the goods to be assembled.
This is the manufacturing cloud that's on the far left of the poster.
You got SpongeBob in there getting assembled.
One of the ways we've heard Plan Pueblo Panama portrayed is that when colonists first came to the Americas, they were looking for a quick way to Asia in order to get goods from the major manufacturing sectors to the major consumer sectors. And after 500 years of trying, they're still really trying to do the same thing. A lot of developers kind of see Central America as being kind of like right in the way of progress. So there's attempts being made to try to cut across it as efficiently as possible.
I see you have a hair dryer there.
Yeah.
Does that symbolize, maybe I'm reaching, but does that symbolize the establishment of a European ideal of beauty. In like almost everywhere colonialism has went, a European ideal of beauty has been like established, and pretty much lessens the self worth of people in their indigenous places.
Yeah, I totally. Yeah, there's just the whole class based, like even to the effect of like subtle differences in skin color in Central America. Who lives up on the Caribbean coast? Like, I don't think we hard coded that in there, but like, yeah, you're totally right. It applies in so many ways. But what's happening?
We this was a hard one in just figuring out what products to put in here that are the most succinct symbols of useless gizmos. But yeah, they always connect to these other things that are questionable about our culture too. That's a really good way.
How does resistance come into this story?
Glad you asked.
Yeah, you well, there are a couple more on the front. This is just the cloud from the north. Pretty self-explanatory.
Basically spraying bullets, chemicals, and corporate like consumer culture.
So these are logos. This is a sort of scene about greenwashing. These are different corporations. Tourism masquerading as a toucan. We've got oil, timber, genetic piracy, and water. They're going to be cutting this giant birthday cake that looks like South America. It says 500 years on it.
This scene connects to carbon trading and climate change stuff, and then also the Mesoamerican biological corridor, sort of the zoo mentality of preserving different bubbles of the region. So this is many, many layers of bad news on the front, and just to be able to show how these things are connected. And then how the poster works is the outside looks like this historical map and has all that bad news, and then you open it up. It's a triptych, so there's shutters, and the whole inside is twice as big because you're seeing the interior of the poster, and the whole interior is a scene at the base of a ceiba tree, which is in many different stories is the tree of life, and there's over 300 specific species of animals, plants, and insects that are engaging in all these different sorts of resistance with the characters coming from the outside. And so we were trying to have it be like the bad news and then the good news, but of course how resistance fits into that is you have to have the conflict of the edge of the two meeting each other. And so it's really hard to see, you know, in this sort of many-layered state, but every animal in here is all specific species that were either requested or they represent different ecological situations in the area. And why we went to such great lengths this time to make it really species specific is not only because we've found great success in not drawing cartoons of the people of this region, but representing them through the animals of their specific ecosystem instead. But also, we really want this poster, our big goal is to have this be like a popular education tool that bridges these normally disparate things of ecology and economy. Usually people talk about the environment or talk about social issues in a very distinctly separate camps, and this time we want to be able to show how these things are interconnected through using images of the natural world to describe these bigger economic situations. When somebody is doing conservation work, of course they don't want to see a picture of just any old bat, right? You have to have that specific bat and the way that it looks and whatever to get really into it. So that's why we're going crazy with the electron microscope pictures of ants and getting them all exact and stuff. So we'll see what happens. Any other questions?
I have a question at some point about how you use this pedagogically, because you...
How do you use what?
Pedagogically, how, what the actual process is. You've referred to bringing these in popular education in Latin America, but also you use them a lot in the United States, and those are two very different audiences. So it interests me how you use them. I mean, here, largely, you're telling us, and once in a while, we're feeding back our ideas, but it sounds like you hope it to be much more interactive, at least in Latin America.
Well, honestly, like I'd say the majority of our presentations take place in the North, and that it's like we create the images in order to be useful in Latin America, and we would like to tour more extensively in Latin America, but really we feel like it's really important that Northern audiences are exposed to these ideas. So we're trying to make sure that they're able to be understood on both sides of the border, but I think that there's like for us just there's been a strong focus on Northern audiences, you know, really receiving this message and being able to understand it.
It's fascinating because on the one hand, the people who most can resonate to a lot of the symbols and the regional, local species are going to be in Latin America as opposed to the U.S. On the other hand, I was thinking before when you showed the slide that had NAFTA, those are acronyms that are U.S. They're not Central, it's not how Central America knows the treaty.
Yeah.
And so these are, it's very interesting to see the implications of who you see your audience as being. And if your audience is hoped to be more Latin America, you might want to think about embedding more of those acronyms and signs that would speak to Latin America, not just...
Well, the part of the reason that we have those English acronyms on the front, just as an example, is the front is explaining, it's about viewpoints of the front is basically Pampula Panama is an advertising package to attract big business to this region, and so we're trying to portray it as this, the stuff on the front is speaking to that audience of the English-speaking big business to like sell the place, and then in the inside,
it's like your map, basically, you know, like the historical explorer map.
Yeah, and then the inside is all, if we use language at all, it's in Spanish, which is like kind of, you know, very problematic in and of itself, but like it's really hard to figure out, you know, this shows a diversity of language and words, so. So yeah, and I think that us not being able to have more experience of using these posters ourselves in Latin America is a funding issue, right? And hopefully this poster is going to change that, and that we will be able to because there's so much interest in when it comes out, but hopefully that funding is going to be able to make it go. Get 10,000 posters to people in the region, and we have ways of the different events in which we're going to try to ship posters down, like the Big Muslim American Forum, so that those can get out to people. But a lot of it is just that we don't have the money to be hearing how people use these posters there and learning from that, which is really bad. But we've heard, because we've been able to get thousands of these Columbia posters to the region, we've heard little bits and pieces of how people are using them there in their organizing work. And certainly that is our biggest goal in this, is to get this poster to the people who can really make the most out of it organizing-wise. And the storytelling is just sort of, you know, the methodology of it. I guess we don't have a whole lot of slides at the inside, which is too bad. Anybody else?
Mm-hmm. I noticed that it's somewhat focused on Colombia, and I was curious to know, are there different projects in the future that you're looking towards to focus on different Latin American countries? Just as an example, Brazil. Will there be any focus like in the future or a considerable project later on to work with other individuals to do different countries in Latin America?
Mm-hmm. Right now, the effort we're currently doing is this poster about Plan Puebla Panama, which covers Mexico to Panama, basically.
Yeah, but effectively not Colombia. Like, the PPP is sort of like, it's like a formality that it doesn't include the whole hemisphere, because it's, you know, linking with I-69 proposal here, the interstate cutting right through that goes to Canada. So it's really just, it's so historical in what it's doing.
I think the better answer to that is us, after we get done with this one that's trying to be specific to Mesoamerica, but obviously relates to stories all over Latin America, is what we want to do is get it together with being able to explain how we make these things and be able to teach that to people or put it out there as a model of how to gather stories and put images together and use them for organizing. And so we want to use the networks that we've established through this to help facilitate other groups of people elsewhere in the world to be able to use their aesthetics and their stories to organize around and us help facilitate that. And also what we're talking about doing is after this trilogy, the next thing would be for us to focus on a body of work about climate change, because climate change is so all-encompassing to everything, unfortunately. We want to be able to help facilitate different groups of people internationally telling their story about climate change.
There's one last little piece of the story that we'd like to share with you from the Plan Puebla Panama poster.
And just so you know, I'm not sure if the other workshops are starting now, but we're technically 5 minutes past our time. But this takes just a minute, and it shows like the density of the new graphic. This is the story of the Campos in Campesino, the farmer without the farm, or the farm without the farmer.
So it starts out with a beehive, which is a metaphor of communally held land. And one of the bees strays away from the beehive and is given by the bank, is given a loan, and by the agricultural department is given its own hexagon. So it's given its own piece of land. So here the farmer is working away on its own private little piece of land, and it's putting its product on a scale. But there's a truck that's like tipping the scales, so it's like an example of grain dumping.
Subsidies from the U.S.
Yeah. And then there the bank is asking for its loan to be returned. So the bee is forced to put a for sale sign on its hexagon.
It loses its farmer hat.
And here there's like several refugee bees that are going down.
Find work.
So they're being put through kind of a ringer, and they're all like falling down into what turns out to be a factory. So here there's several rows of bees that are working at their sewing machines.
There's not just the story of the farmer though, there's the land which is coming back out of the grinder, and it's much larger hexagons with highways interconnecting.
So then the other hexagons depict like different the different ways that those different pieces of land are being used. So there's cattle ranching, there's large scale banana plantations, there's timber, and there's also oil extraction.
So that area on the poster is about this big. A poster that's like this, and then opens up to be 6 foot by 3 foot. So that's what's taking so long. It's just luck. Thanks for y'all's attention. You can probably tell we're just sort of making this all up as we go along. So we'd love to hear what you think.